Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Me and KD talking about big what-ifs, man. All-time great what-ifs. I don't even know how we got into this, but I think we started talking about...
We're talking about Eddie Jones during the break. He was 32. By the way, Richmond McGee was 35. Just
Richmond
a quick correction.
McGee was 35. Shout out.
At least you said he was 8. I'm remembering now he's 35.
No, I think you're right about that. I think he switched numbers at 1.2.
But Eddie Jones was 32.
Eddie Jones came in as if I'm not mistaken, he was a 5-star player.
He was a big-time player with, I believe, Lamar Houston. And I was telling you, I love when guys come in, especially at a different position. So your defensive lineman and you're both badasses coming in. It's like, we're wearing 32 and 33. Linebackers for the U coming in back in the day. I'm wearing number 1 and he's wearing 4. We're going to destroy you for 3 years.
We're coming in together to change the game.
But there was a lot of talent there.
It was a ton of talent on the 40 acres at that time. You were right after the national championship win. Mac had already stockpiled a couple of classes. That 05 class was stocked. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
That's one of your most successful classes in terms of NFL hit rate. So I just think Eddie Jones played a lot, still was a great contributor. I don't think he reached his ceiling. He probably should have. You know, I mean, could have been more utilized, more developed here. And honestly, let's be honest, right around that time is when, and this is what we were talking about, Texas started to relax.
Yeah.
Mac Brown relaxed a little bit after that.
He did.
It was right around, and I said Texas still got to another national title, but remember, your O-line was average to below average in when Colt makes his runs in 08-09.
That tells us they were getting lazy.
They were starting to relax. I say relax. That'll be the word I used to be like, what do you mean lazy? They were starting to relax a little bit.
We're trying to breathe.
They relaxed a little bit. And you know what? Life was good. And yeah. I think that's where Texas started to downturn just a little bit when the offensive line fell off. Everything else was still great. Defensive line, linebackers, DBs. I think.
Well, honestly, and you brought in a 5-star that everyone wanted to replace Colt. Now, I think they were too selective with that, or at least too careful with not surrounding it with more stuff. But Garrett Gilbert would have been, and most people would have taken him.
I think another example. People are not going to like this. It's another example of them relaxing too, because they put it all in the Garrett Gilbert honeypot, right?
Yes.
They went all in on it. And Mac never did that, right? He always had a nice little competition before that. Before it was Sims and Major when he first came in.
Chance and Vince.
Then he had Chance and Vince. Chance was a 5-star until it was Vince. They were 2 5-stars going at it. Chris Sims was a 5-star. He was like stockpiling 5-stars. Like, you know what? Whatever.
Maybe
wins,
Mac was done with that.
And maybe he was. Maybe he was tired of the conflict, because I know the Major Sims thing wore him out a little bit, of course, and people questioned his decision making there. And the Vince thing was easy, even though Chance was playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, I'm going with Vince.
I think Chance got that one.
It changed it. Chance.
He got it more than Major got it.
Yeah, Major still doesn't accept it to this day.
No comment on that.
He still would protest to this day. What? Sims got the job. But I think Mac, he started relaxing. Quarterback, O-line, and then, of course, I think it all falls down. Nick Saban calls it the success flu.
It is.
He says you get success, and then that's why Nick Saban, he literally states, I will not enjoy a championship for too long. He enjoys it for like a day or two, and then he gets right back on the grind, because he says he has to fight against that success flu, because that mindset of, oh, I succeeded. I can exhale and relax. I made it. I'm here. I'm the best.
And that's natural in life.
It's natural in life. And
anything.
Then once that happens, people already got a target on your back. They're coming for you. And you're relaxed, and they're hungry as they've ever been. And that's what happens. And I think it happened to Mac, and it was natural.
It did. There's something, too, about the Austin thing, too. We've talked about at UT, all the great things that go into it. It's also, in terms of catching that flu, it would be like the winter in the subway in New York if you're touching everything and then not washing your hands. You can get it. You can get it really damn quickly. The environment is set up for you to get that flu and to get it often.
DeLoss Dodd said that. DeLoss Dodd said, we live a good life here in Austin, Texas. And student athletes do too. And he said, you got to fight against that as a coach. That's one of your biggest opponents.
Yeah.
Is that this is a good life. Austin is a great city. It's a great university. Fans are awesome. Everybody treats you real good when you're a student athlete. And you almost got to fight against it to try to get them to get in the mindset of, you got to grind. You still have to, just like you grind to get here. Texas is not your destination.
Right.
This is a step. It's not the destination, because everybody gets in and go, I made it to Texas. I'm a Texas football player.
It's a fun step.
I made it. Yes, I'm here. And it's like, no. you have to be on your way somewhere else, because otherwise, if you're not.
You almost got Eddie Murphy on that. I love it.
Yeah, no, but they do.
F you, Austin.
But we talk about that.
F you, too.
You get that complacency. He's like, no, man. You got to be, Texas has to be a stepping stone for something greater for you. Even Mac Brown talked about that, right? This can't, even national champion, what he say, this can't be the greatest moment of your life.
Right.
You always got to be striving to do something better. If this is the destination for you, then we're going to fail ultimately. Because I need you guys to be great. And if you think you made it here, then you're not great. That's, Texas has been dealing with that.
They've had coaches they've hired that, I mean, boy, it sure looks like they retired if they won a national championship. I'm not going to get into names or went to a Final Four or eight, and then they come here and it just doesn't happen at all. Sometimes it just doesn't happen, but if you're at a better place with more opportunities, sometimes you got to wonder, are they, even subconsciously, just kind of done? Do they have the same drive they had to get to that point 15 point. Years ago?
Amen. No, I'm with it. I agree. Some people say that about Shaka.
Yeah.
Things change.
I honestly wasn't even thinking about
his mentality. No, I know you weren't. But
it's funny because I said Final Four, Final Eight. I was actually thinking of a women's basketball coach that came here who was Final Four stuff. And I love, I mean, the little time I had to work with her, she was awesome. But it just didn't, you know, results are the results. You just kind of go, okay, well, what happened?
Yeah. All right, random discussion there. We're just talking Texas sports. We're excited that Texas sports.
We're talking Texas sports and I guess NCAA stuff. How long will that last, Rod?
This is the story that has been percolating for a while. Okay, so the NCAA Board of Governors is meeting right now, actually. I believe the meeting ends at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a 25-member panel, the committee, mostly of university presidents, but they are the final decision makers in the NCAA in college sports. They're the ones who counsel the championships for the spring and the winter sports.
Yes.
Right? They're the ones who can do that. They're the only ones who have that authority. They have the ultimate authority.
And the Power Five said, "Well, talk to us when money's on the line."
Yeah, they have exactly.
Our money.
So, here's what's happening. So, they've had a meet. I think the last meeting was July 24th. They've been meeting periodically to see where they are in relation to the COVID-19 or in regards to the COVID-19 virus, to see that if they need to cancel sports or need to change it up or postpone sports, whatever they need to do. Remember, like I said, a lot of D2, and they include D1, D2, and D3. This is not just about D1 sports and FBS, and it's not just about college football, but it's mostly about college football. And everybody's still waiting to see if they're going to delay this decision and postpone it, and they could kick it down the line, which they've done and which they'll probably do again. But at one point, they have to decide if they're going to have championships for the fall sports. And they could cancel the championships. And if they do that, like they did for the winter and the spring.
So you're talking, obviously, you're talking conference and the what would be bowl games and the playoff?
They don't control bowl games.
I didn't think so.
Remember, the NCAA's got no college football playoff is an independent entity from the NCAA. They already started their separation. People don't really know that, but
they've
already started this separation.
Why you've got those shady looking guys with the bad sports coats?
Yeah, I mean they started the college football playoff was a big part of that. You know what, NCAA? We'll decide. We get our own champion. We'll decide our own champion. Now, the March Madness and an NCAA tournament.
That's how the NCAA makes their money.
That is the NCAA's event they put it on.
Which is why I said the schools, the Power Fives, would say, talk to us when it's our money.
Exactly.
That's how the NCAA makes
money. That's how 85% of their revenue comes from March Madness, I believe. Somewhere around there. Some crazy number. So what the D1, D2, and D3 fall sports are waiting on is decision from the NCAA or what they're going to do about their championships. Now, a lot of D2 and D3 schools have already decided to cancel or postpone their football seasons. And this is not just about football. There's volleyball, there's soccer, I mean, cross country. Not going to all the fall sports, but it affects them too. We talk mostly about football. I don't want to sound insensitive, like we don't care about the other sports.
Oh no, that's just the reality. So.
But we know football pays the bills for a lot of these
for everything you just
programs,
mentioned.
No question about it. So what they're waiting on is, you know, if the NCAA is going to cancel fall championships, then Power Five schools and maybe even some other FBS schools, but we know the Power Five schools because there's a Sports Illustrated article that points this out. And according to Sports Illustrated, Power Five leagues have discussed staging their own championships for fall Olympic sports. And also there's some discussion about them staging their own championships for fall sports period if the NCAA decides, all right, we're going to cancel those championships. Because the truth is, the NCAA can declare that, but as a conference, you can still do what you want to do.
Yeah.
They don't really have control over you. They're just the organization that you look to. They're essentially the United Nations. The United Nations doesn't really control anything, but you want the United Nations to back you because that means you have the backing and the, you know, the
right.
Support of most of the world, most of the, you know, westernized world.
Cool to see all the flags out on the building in New York, too. That's pretty much all I get out of it.
No,
and some interesting, when they do meet, and you've got all these different leaders coming together, some interesting stuff there, video.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, they don't have, I mean, they could say that, all right, since if you're a conference going to declare you're going to do your own thing, then you are not a part of the NCAA anymore. Like, you're not a part of the United Nations anymore.
Right.
Which there will be, of course, some fallout and consequences, but I doubt the NCAA is going to go that far.
No.
Because all these Power Five conferences are thinking, we're going to have football because we got to pay the bills. The NCAA has all these lofty, you know, ambitions and all these lofty goals and these holier-than-thou, you know, declarations that they make with the NCAA stoop code of conduct and all that kind of stuff. But they still don't really get back to the athletic program's budget issues if football doesn't happen. And they're going to be cut anyway. So there's a lot of belief, and Sports Illustrated points this out in their article, that the Power Five schools are going to operate independently if the NCAA decides they're going to cancel fall championships. Like, it's not going to be any fall championships. But nobody believes the NCAA is going to have the gall to do that.
I don't think they will.
They did it for the winter and the spring sports, though.
I don't think they will. Look, they know, because a majority of the 66 teams that usually get in the NCAA tournament are Power Five teams. I know college basketball, you've got some that aren't, but
yes,
our majority are Power Five teams, and that is their breadwinner, the NCAAs. So they're not going to let this happen. But it does feel like this is inevitable and that it's been moving this direction, that eventually the Power Fives are going to separate from the NCAA that has, of course, its own issues that we talk about all the time and is not a model organization. Fair on that one?
Yeah, they just they won't step up when there's an ethical dilemma or any type of issue of a moral compromise. Well, this is we're doing a 100-year pandemic, and what you need now, even Mac Brown talked about this recently, talked about uniformity, and we need unanimity. We need schools that can and conferences operating along the same guidelines, and the NCAA is sitting in the background. Like, they want to be in the background on this issue because they know there are lives at stake, the safety and health of your student athletes, and they don't want to get into the discussion of, you know, right now on college campuses, they're trying to limit the amount of people on college campuses right now until they open them back up for the fall. And in the off season, they've had only essential employees on the college campus. They've asked professors who don't need to be there, and, you know, workers who don't need to be on the college campuses to work remotely if they can do it, and they're trying to limit that. And yet, you know, part of the essential people that have been on the campus have been football players.
Mm-hmm.
And if they decide, all right, you know what, we're not going to have any fans in the stands, we're going to shut down the NCAA championships because we don't think it's safe enough, then, and they decide, oh no, we're going to have college football, but maybe the other sports, we won't have them, then I think they are proving the point that these are employees.
Oh,
these
no.
are essential employees to the model of, right, college sports.
Well, I think even if they break away, this is where the NCAA does have some leverage, and it gets to your point here. Even if they, you know, the Power Fives want to break away, at that point, then they're going to have to start paying these guys like a minor league, right?
Something. You got to do something at that point.
Because the whole school thing, I mean, well, they're still going to school, but the NCAA part of it, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they'll be able to BS their way through it.
Well, the name, image, and likeness is part of that, right? That's why the fact that the NCAA hasn't just approved the name, image, and likeness across the board and come up with their own plan is ridiculous. If they do that, I think the optics of all of this looks a whole lot better. the optics is, oh, no. There, some of these guys are having the opportunity to profit. That's why they're going out there to profit off their own name, image, and likeness. Can't do that if there's no football season.
Too. So the women, go, all the so sports. The Oklahoma ace is going to be making some money.
No doubt.
And softball, not the baseball ace. Or maybe both. The softball
whatever it is.
Ace.
Volleyball, yeah. If you got a great volleyball product in that town, whatever it is. But you're right, that's a different discussion in a capitalist society. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you're getting something for what you're worth. You're going out there. You're taking a risk, but you're also understand that you are doing it for a reason because you could profit off of it. Right now, these young men and women are taking a risk. Yeah, they are, but it's for their scholarship. The optics of it seem off unless the NCAA can guarantee safety, which nobody can really do.
No, they can't. They got to jump on this, the NCAA and the likeness thing. Soon,
yeah, just though. Do it.
I mean, I say that with a big... big smile.
Well, Florida and California are going to do it. No more states are going to do it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. The legislation is going to be pushed through.
It's going to happen at some point. So
it's
you might
happening
as well,
already.
Yeah, it's already happening, so you might as well do something.
I don't know what they're waiting on at this point. So,
it's the NCAA. They wait on everything. I mean, they are beyond reactive.
Yeah.
No, like, proactive is not in their vocabulary. It is reactive.
A Power 5 AD told Sports Illustrated... In that piece I was just referring to, quote, "It's probably the toughest period the NCAA has faced in a long time. I can't look at an issue in recent times and say, quote, we got good leadership on that. It's hard not to see significant change coming out of this. It's going to be a separation of the have and have nots, and then maybe the haves will decide name, image, and likeness across the board, and the have nots. Well, I don't know what's going to happen to the have-nots. Even not playing the non-conference games is going to be absolutely financially devastating for some of these mid-major programs, if you will, South Floridas of the world.
It's going to be a lot of blood. It's just how much and how low does it go? Because you're right. Because that level, they're really going to feel this. Yeah. And it may just be that 1.7 that they missed out on. But, yeah, I think we've known all along that all this hinges, at least next spring, and how big the bloodbath is. It's all about how many games can football get in this year.
Pretty much, it is.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
I totally agree because that pays the bills safely.
Safely,
want to get in safely. Yeah, all right.
Speaking of that, we have some Texas practice nuggets. Anything stand out to you?
Oh yeah, let me get to these real quick.
247.
Yeah, my friends at 247 Sports got some practice nuggets. Actually, Chip Brown got these practice nuggets in. So I want to give Chip some credit on that. I'll say this though, and I've seen a couple of these that it stood out to me, or at least a couple of the excerpts that stood out to me. I'll start with the guys who are projected starters and some of the guys whose names are going to be talked about a lot when it comes to either playing time or on the depth chart. Denzel Okafor, it said that fifth-year senior Denzel Okafor will probably get the first crack at right tackle. Remember we were talking about whether he's going to be a guard or tackle. It's the right tackle and the right guard position were going to be open. And it points out that the reason is because one of the players turning heads on the offensive line is 6'5", 314-pound redshirt freshman Isaiah Hookfin.
Ooh.
Who's battling for the guard position vacated by Parker Braun. And then we talked about this. The excerpt here is Hookfin is moving well, communicates well, uses his hands well, according to one team source who added, watch out for Hookfin. I think going into the summer, the thought was he might be a year away, but he could be ready sooner than expected. And it doesn't matter if it's Isaiah Hookfin. I mean, you got a
number. Tyler Johnson.
Exactly, right? You got Christian Jones. I mean, is it Tope Amade?
Yep.
You got a couple of guys. You just need one or two of those guys to stand out at any of those positions, center, guard, tackle. Because if any of those guys stands out and you say, ooh, I see a star flashing there. You can give me some starting reps.
I'm glad you said center, too, because if that works out, then Kerstetter, okay. We know we can move you around.
That's even
whatever
better.
Whatever we don't have figured out.
Totally agree. Because he's already your manufactured depth. Kerstetter can play guard, tackle, center. But if any of those other guys steps up at any of those positions, guard, tackle, or center, then you got because of Kerstetter, you got numerous options. And then you know where Okafor needs to fit in. All right. So if I got a guy that's actually showing me he could be dependable at guard, another guy who I think is similar dependable, who's a veteran, I'll put Denzel Okafor at tackle. Because, he'll be dependable there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start building your depth chart of a rotation of 7-8 guys on the offensive line.
It does seem like they've got more options than they've had in a long time.
They do.
And if you're an Ohio State fan listening, hell, I'll give you a bunch of programs that have big offensive lines that are loaded. Notre Dame, Wisconsin, so not even like the top three or four. You're probably laughing at that. That's where Texas has been, though. And boy, that's the hardest pool to get out of.
Yep. We just talked about, that's where we saw the first cracks in Mac Brown's blueprint at offensive line.
You almost see the first cracks there, and it's the hardest crack to actually seal.
It's a foundation. Like, you know, foundation issues on a house are the worst issues, right?
Oh, yeah.
Any other issue with the house you can deal with, but the foundation's messed up. It's like, damn. Foundation's messed up.
So we got to bulldoze this thing.
No, yeah.
That's almost what Texas had to do with the offensive line.
Pretty much. And I think
and you're not redshirting guys either.
Jeff Howe has a great stat. 15 scholarship offensive linemen at Texas right now. 10 of those are blue chip, 4-star and 5-star guys. And that does not include Kerstetter and Cosme who are starting. That's your analogy about the garden.
Yeah. And a majority of them, they have lately been able to redshirt, which is nice. We're finally really at that point where almost all of them are redshirted. I mean, hell, even Okafor got that in, even though it was kind of backwards and maybe messed him up a little bit. But still, he got the redshirt in.
Here's another nugget for you. Marquez Bimich apparently has done a great job remaking his body since the end of last season when he weighed 272.
It's 251.
One of the most explosive and strongest players on the team. Yeah, now 251. They say he looks quick, fast. You know, so maybe he can be one of those guys, another edge rusher for you. I don't know if he's going to be opposite of a guy like Joseph Osai or maybe even play the same position as Joseph Osai. Now he's 251, different type of defensive end. But either way, the more pass rushers you have, the more natural pass rushers, the better. I've heard he's one of those guys can be a natural pass rusher. Have heard great things about Taquan Graham, too, who's at over 300, but it's a slim, kind of retrofitted 300, and it's a guy that can also be a pass rusher. You may have four guys that can actually penetrate on the D-line this year.
Then you got two 348s in there that can hopefully go back and forth and be able to spell each other as well.
Yeah. No, that D-line, I've predicted it's going to be a strength this year. If it's not, I'd be very disappointed. It should be something that the linebacking core is going to lack a lot of talented depth. You should be able to make up for it with your D-line rotation and the talent you have there and the talent in the backfield.
All right, we'll get back to some more college football later on, including some Texas Nuggets. But up next, I guess this can work for college football, but I'm definitely seeing it in baseball. And football and baseball would be the two sports that I think organizations and coaches need to be careful with some of these guys. Shohei Ohtani, once again, some arm problems. He's going to be shut down for a little while. But Rod talked about it earlier. He's talking about it with defecating. But athletes get in rhythms, and they definitely get in routines. And some of this stuff is messing some of these guys up. We'll get into that, and I want to get Rod's take on exactly what he would do if he had a high-profile, big-time talent in one and done.
Like that 5-star recruit at Kentucky, he's been here and he's gonna stay here. It's one and done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
Let's go one and done. And as I'm looking at a younger Bucky Godbolt, this is LHN, Texas Hawaii, Ricky's first game. I remember this game.
Oh, was he playing fullback here?
It was the other night, but we knew he was gonna be good. We knew Hawaii's defense wasn't very good, but that was a fun Texas offense that year, and they just showed Bucky.
And back, so he's a freshman. So is Sean? Did him and Sean come in together?
Yes, they did. Sean was Blinn.
Okay.
LBJ.
So he was
and then Blinn.
Okay.
And then came in, and they would have been there. And then we talked about Priest a little bit.
So Priest was already there.
Priest was there's Bucky. Look at Buck with there.
Buck. Dude, I'm gonna take pictures of this. All right, good girl. I'm going to take some pictures of this when they show Buck. Now I got to wait for them to show Buck again, damn it.
God, Ricky, that early on, he was so good. You see that move there? I talked about the movie made on Rich Cody later that year. His peripheral was, they always talked about that with Rocket Ismail. Rocket had insane peripheral.
They could see the guy coming.
He could see stuff that we just don't see.
So he stopped on a dime.
Ricky
guy
had
whiffing.
That. Yeah, Ricky would do that. Whoop. You go flying by.
Some guys literally, they do have, they see like some creature. Like they have different degrees of sight than other people. They do. I didn't really have it. As a DB, you need some periphery.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, running backs. I mean, some of those guys, it's amazing. There's no way. Sometimes I think they feel it. I think sometimes
Reggie Bush was like that in college.
I think some guys, because it's almost the guy's coming from behind him, and then he end up cutting back. And I'm like, there's no way he saw that guy.
How do you feel that?
You anticipated that guy. You felt him, and your spidey sense went off.
Yeah. Well, it's like Derek Lewis on the 4th and inches. At least we knew what was going on. He looked up, and he was in St. Louis in the dome and said, uh-oh. I got a fast guy coming after me. I got to wrap up here.
Which is brilliant, by the way. Like, I wouldn't have that kind of I wouldn't have that wherewithal. Like,
yeah.
He looked at the big screen
just
to
thinking,
find out
hey,
who was
man,
chasing
we him. Just needed to get that.
That was brilliant.
And next play, Priest
Football
Holmes.
Football IQ, man.
Priest Holmes with, I believe, a good rookie block on a halfback lead.
Wow.
In there. God, that game was great. But this has been fun to watch as well. I'm not sure my one and done is gonna affect college football too much, although it could, and maybe it's already affecting the NFL. But Rod and I were talking about baseball during the break, and I was giving him love on his Twins pick because Twins look really good, and they're actually playing right now. In fact, we'll give you some score updates, including NBA coming up because there was a Texas team involved. But right now I want to focus more on Rod. It's probably safe to say that, at least on the horn, I'm not going to be one of the people who's preaching safety the most. Is that fair? I mean, it depends on what safety, but more sports safety and saying, hey, these guys need to go out there and play.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you take the risk.
Take the risk. Let it go.
Sports is a little danger. There's a little danger element to it. That's the way it's
that's
supposed
the way it
to
is.
It was meant to be.
Right.
That way.
So I don't want to soften, and I'm not even talking COVID here. I'm talking more on the field, on the court, whatever that is.
You're not trying to legislate safety into the game.
Let's obviously be smart. So if I'm looking at the NFL stuff, are they moving in the right direction? Yes, they are. Mm. But even there's stuff there where I'm thinking, I still like kickoffs and I still like punt
returns.
Like
somebody to get hit every now and then.
I still want fights in hockey and baseball. I don't want that
there
to
you
be.
Go.
Taken away.
You still think there should be in pitching? Hey, let the game police itself.
Yes,
but don't throw it at a guy's head.
No, not Joe Kelly stuff.
But
no. If he would have dotted Bregman in the back,
right on the thigh,
I would have been all over.
It'd have been good.
I would have been all over it. But with considering COVID, and considering we started the show off, we were laughing. Rod said he's never gone number two here in the building, and he's very proud of it. He was very proud of it. And he said because of his athletic genes, because he was a pro athlete, that he's still on that tight of a schedule.
I'm really regimented. Yeah,
most athletes are.
They are,
and that even goes throughout the year, Rod.
It
is. So all these sports and their schedule, their off-season workout. They're trying to ramp up.
It's throwing
and then
off,
in baseball,
man.
You got ramped up, and then you didn't. Mm. Who knows if everyone's throwing as much as they should? Who knows if everyone's working out as much as they should?
Yep.
Who knows if you're stretching? All that stuff with all the sports. I think I think basketball in the NBA is going to be least affected because I think these guys have to stay in good shape. You're going to know if they're out of shape. But who knows if someone pops an Achilles or if someone tears something and you think, well, who's our boy Florida State guy? Jonathan with the Magic. I'm forgetting his name. Jonathan Isaac. Who tore his ACL.
He did. Oh,
I have
man.
No idea if that's
story.
Connected with the fact that they just came back and they're trying to ramp it up. Mm. But with baseball and football, it definitely can be an issue. Mm. And I'm not going Sammy safety on you here too much, but I'm looking at Shohei Ohtani, who's coming off Tommy John surgery. Mm. I don't know if I would have, considering everything got stopped, I don't know if I would have taken these months to let him even pitch. And now he's been shut down as a pitcher. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. They think it's a grade one slight tear or forearm strain. Same worry I have with Verlander. And we don't know.
I was just going to bring up the Astros, but I will let you go.
When they say forearm strain, Rod, you've hung around athletics and the baseball world enough. A lot of times that ends up being an elbow issue. And if he just had TJ, and if there's anything connected to that, then he may never pitch again. I look at Verlander, but more Osuna, right?
Yep.
Do you bring them back? I mean, if you're having issues.
How long ago was the surgery?
Verlander's never.
No, I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay, Shohei. So it would have been probably 15, 16 months ago. Sam, you can check on that.
Okay.
I mean, he's on schedule to throw.
So he's supposed to throw.
He was on schedule to throw, yes.
Yeah.
He didn't pitch last year.
But your point is, you haven't had the usual offseason.
No.
You're not dealing with the usual offseason. You don't know what he's been doing. You've been separated. It's not like he's been at the facility. Because when I was hurt for the Detroit Lions.
It's a medical
Lions,
miracle you haven't taken a deuce here.
Yeah, no.
You're here a lot.
No. But to your point, when I was with the Detroit Lions and I got hurt, I had shoulder surgery 3 different times, I was always there. I didn't go home. I spent more time with the Detroit Lions at the facility than I did at my home. But
I believe that.
They didn't. Yeah, I was there rehabbing, and I was there getting checked out. I was there working out. But they didn't do that. They couldn't. They literally were not allowed to
be
there. And being there just helped me. I would get up 6 in the morning, go there, rehab, do everything I need to do, and then I would be in my routine.
Yeah.
I don't know what routine they were in.
And look, I don't know if that happened because of the routine or if that was just going to happen anyway, right? But with some of these guys, especially with arms and pitchers, or heck, we saw with Mike Soroka. Remember that song we were singing
before I left? Mike Soroka.
Mike Soroka. Mike Soroka has a torn Achilles now after last night.
That sucks.
And he's really damn young. I have no idea if any of that is connected to him not being on a regular throwing schedule, whether it's a young guy not getting in and being forced to have to go to the trainer and stretch, whatever. We don't know if there's a connection, but I do know on some of these that there's probably going to be an added chance that things happen because you're not on your regular schedule. And some guys need, Rod, some guys need to have the attendance check to go lift weights and to go do all that. And not even attendance, they more, hell, I know I've gotten my best workouts in whenever I'm working out with a buddy.
Yep.
Because you get pushed. Or if you have a trainer, right? I mean, most people, non-athletes, but I'm sure some, even some athletes, they kind of need that, and they need to be told, "Hey, go hit the tub, go hit the cold tub, go get a massage. You need to be stretching more. Whatever that stuff is, I just kind of wonder with some of these guys how the schedule is going to affect them. Like I said, I've got no proof, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you Ohtani got hurt because of that. But if I'm the Angels, I wouldn't risk it.
So I'm seeing, too, he got the surgery in September of 2018, so he is 23 months out from surgery.
I knew he was a long way out, and they've been really careful with it. And if this was a normal year, I would not be saying anything, but because they ramped up and then stopped, I don't know what Shohei's doing during the break. Rod, am I nervous, Nelly?
No, and the trainers don't either. Listen, the Astros have been dealing with injuries, you know, in the offseason and even going back to last season. They have a lot of guys that have had surgery. Ryan Presley had a surgery. Verlander had a surgery. I forget his name right now, top of my head. Who just had Tommy John?
Oh, Lance McCullers.
Lance McCullers, thank you very much. So they had a lot of guys who had surgery in the offseason, and Roberto Osuna, now he's back, and he's hurt now. So your closer's hurt. Your starter's hurt. You got a lot of guys who started the season on the injured list. And like I said, I'm with you. I don't know if that would have it's just a regular thing or if that's because they had a fragmented, disrupted offseason. But it didn't help.
Right. It didn't help. And I guess the point of us not knowing is that's when you probably should be a little bit more cautious with certain individuals. And to me, Shohei would be one of those individuals. And look, he's probably gonna be able to be a DH and be probably a pretty damn good one if he never pitches again.
Yep.
But there's also something really special for baseball. This is more not just Angels. As a baseball fan, I know BK is all about this guy because he loves two-way players. And I think Shohei's the type of guy that can bring in a lot of different people, and not only in this country but other countries, Rod, to baseball that needs more eyeballs on it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. It's something that, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's got to be something. So look at all the guys. Here's Major League Baseball's pitcher, arm issues.
I looked at that today.
Did you saw this?
Yeah, read it.
Well,
some of the names are pretty big in there.
Of course, Kluber. We've talked about the Astros, but Kluber is Rangers teammate.
Verlander.
Jose Leclerc.
Yes.
Also in there, the Dodgers, Alex Wood. Of course, talking about the Astros, Joe Biagiani?
Yeah, Biagiani, I believe.
Brad Peacock. Rookies, Wade Davis. The Pirates, Kyle Craig. The Royals, Mike Montgomery. The Cubs, James Norwood. The Giants, Conrad. And the White Sox, Ronaldo Lopez have all been failed by shoulder problems early on. And, I mean, they go on, and it's a longer list here, too. They got a lot of other guys. So they said that right now, disproportionate, does seem to be a lot of injuries to pitchers. This article is from The Ringer, actually. And I think I should reset. Injured pitchers are Major League Baseball's other big pandemic problem.
They are. And it's hard for me not to think these things are coming together a little bit.
No, I literally typed in what you were saying into Google, and that's what came up.
I did, too. There's a couple articles on it. So if y'all want to check that out, and if you've got any ideas on that, 337-3776, that is the Specs text line. And, of course, if you really have to give us a call, 512-447-3776.
Yeah.
We're going to be getting a guest on tomorrow to talk some Rangers, Jared Sandler, on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. So
I didn't realize Cole Hamels and Kershaw were dealing with injuries, too.
Yeah, they are.
And I didn't realize that.
Kershaw, I'm not going to blame that on COVID because Kershaw has had his own injuries the last couple of years. But with pitchers, especially in football, would that be something like fast twitch guys that you worry about, Rod?
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. Pitching is such a fine-tuned thing, and like it's almost like track and field. You want to have you want to peak at the right time in pitching, right? That's why they have the offseason. That's why they rotate the guys, pitch counts. All this is so that the pitcher will have the longevity and be peaking at the perfect time. And I think that's, to your point, that's when the not having the schedule and the regimen that your body has now been trained and conditioned for I don't know how long since you've been in middle school
for
baseball players.
Track is a great,
you know what I mean?
For and, pitching, that's a great comparison.
They're saying now the Olympic, like the Olympics, whenever they decide to have the Olympics, that athletes are going to be in shock since, in a sense, because they don't have the same competition schedule. They're not training the same as they were training, and they trained for 4 years for the Olympics, and now they stop their training. Now you're going to restart the training. They said, man, those guys are going to be in shock for most of those Olympic sports. It's just not going to be at the elite level, the zenith you're used to.
And we haven't seen it, or I haven't seen any reports on it, but I'm sure the Texas coaches in their own way, or I should say the Texas strength coach, that he's probably looking at that, and Yancey's probably thinking, okay, I can tell who was in shape and who wasn't. Yep. Not only when they get there, Rod, but more importantly, probably just when you're working out, right?
Totally agree. Yeah.
You're going to be able, and some of those guys, you know, for the pro athletes, they can probably find ways to work out and get this done. Some of the college guys, we saw some of the video online.
Oh, man, dude. And they were at home?
They're at home. And actually, some really creative ways to be able to create a bench press by going to Home Depot.
There's only so much you can do,
getting
though.
Cement. There's only so much you can do.
It's not Rocky III. You're
Rocky
not,
Four.
Rocky
Ivan Drago. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Well, like,
or
even
three,
Rocky
two,
III.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say, Clever Lang.
You're right.
Clever
right.
Lang in the hood. But you're right. You want to be Drago working out with the high-tech stuff, but no, they were Clubber Lang in it.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but a lot of times, you know, the reality is Drago would have kicked his ass. Not only because
Clubber Lang or Rocky?
Rocky. Not only because he was 8 inches taller, but I think that training would have helped too.
His training was better than
his training was better.
Let's be honest now.
Right.
Rocky was working harder, not smarter.
Hey, he had Bridget Nielsen when she was hot, so a lot of things were going for Drago, okay?
That's awesome. All right. That's good stuff, man. Thanks for the one and done. That's good. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of folks out there pointing out the other epidemic that might be right now in Major League Baseball, and that is the fact that a lot of the arms are dealing with a ton of injuries. All right. When we come back, we'll get to Off the Record. This Off the Record. You know what? This is a really good story. This is a feel-good story for Off the Record. Usually that's not the case, but it is today. All right. We'll be right back. It's the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9 and 101.9 AM 1260.
D.D. Megadoodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get the rain and comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with Kevin Dunn. BK is on vacation, much deserved, and we got Sam Pika back there to being the real MVP. He's twisting and tweaking the dials and keeping it funky on the Triple Option. All right, time for a little Off the Record. This story comes from Wellington, New Zealand. So how about this? This is a great story, man. Three men were rescued from a tiny Pacific island after writing a giant SOS sign in the sand that was spotted from above by authorities. The men had been missing in the Micronesia archipelago. Is it archipelago?
I don't know. That's above my head.
It's like, it's a term for like a type of island.
Okay.
Trust me.
All right.
Don't ask me more than I do about this. Sam is going to look it up and make us smarter in a second. But they were trapped there on this Micronesia island for nearly 3 days when their distress signal was spotted Sunday on an uninhabited island by searchers on Australian and U.S. aircraft.
Wow.
So the men had apparently set out from Pulawat Atoll in a 23-foot boat on July 30th and had intended to travel about 27 miles to what they call Pulap Atoll when they sailed off course and ran out of fuel. Searchers in Guam asked for Australian help. The military ship Canberra, which was returning to Australia from exercises in Hawaii, diverted to the area and joined the forces with U.S. searches from Guam. And
they're lucky they found an island, though, right?
Yeah, they were found about 118 miles from where they had set out. There you go.
Wow. And that worked.
I'm seeing it's called an archipelago.
Archipelago.
And it's a group of islands and the sea surrounding them.
There you
go. All right.
It's just a random group of islands. Sorry.
Learned something there.
There you go. So they just, I mean.
3 days, though, Rod.
3 days.
That's getting
traps.
There. I mean, so I'm guessing, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they had water, enough water.
Yeah, because you got to get fresh water. So I don't know what they did. Maybe there's a freshwater source on the island. That would be real. That'd be. Yeah, because you can't survive more than, you can't survive long without water.
Yeah, water
you can survive
you need,
a while without food.
Oh, yeah, without food
you
can.
You can survive like a week and, you know, I think you survive like 10 days, maybe 14 days without food. You can survive a long time without food. Water you need like within the first 72 hours of being stranded somewhere.
Got to have that.
Three or four days.
Yeah, it's like 3 or 4 days.
Although maybe there was coconuts there.
Oh, that's true. Good point.
Pineapple
that's
tree.
That's a good point.
Not pineapple, but maybe, you know, maybe.
Maybe Grayville's pineapple.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
But you're right.
Thinking,
it could be some exotic fruits there.
Hey, wipe that SOS away. We're going to be able to stay here for a little while.
It's like a castaway situation. But at least they were there together. At least they weren't there alone.
That is
if they had been
true.
There by themselves, then, yeah, times are. There's three there. So you've got a team to work together. All right, you guys search that island. Let's look for resources, look for water, look for coconuts, whatever.
That's crazy.
That's awesome, man. That's a feel-good story.
Yeah. Would you survive? How long would you survive on an island like that?
It's a good question. It's a good question. A castaway situation, or would I have three friends?
Let's say
only two friends.
Let's say it's the three of us right now.
We would survive for a while.
I think we would.
Yeah, we'd be okay.
Sam, I bet you got a lot of skills.
We'd be okay.
Yeesh.
Oh, no.
I don't know. I'm pretty good at rolling. Yeah. I don't know how well that is.
We might find some items on the island that are good for that.
Some local herb.
I think we'd be okay because you just need. Because I watch Naked and Afraid all the time. I don't know.
We'd
why
be
I watch
leaning on you.
I watch,
you watch
Naked
that
and Afraid
all the time.
So you gotta be a survivalist. So you gotta look for number one. You gotta find water. Water's number one, and then you gotta figure out how to make fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you can find a clean water source, great. You can find. A coconut's grape can't get it.
But do you need fire if there's nothing to kill there? Are you talking about fire for heat?
Fire for you to clean your water.
Oh, yeah.
You might get like dirty, gross water somewhere that you don't want to drink because the monkeys are drinking out of it.
Oh, man.
You got to purify that water.
I'd kill myself quickly on
that
stuff.
So you got to boil that water.
I wouldn't even think of that. I'd say, we got water. Oh, don't drink that yet.
Oh, you go with the bubble guts?
Yeah.
That is the bubble guts.
That'd be some College Station major bubble guts right there.
That's College Station cholera right there. That's not stuff you want right there.
Good story, though.
That was a good story, man. I mean, it's crazy how many people get lost at sea. These stories happen, they're more common than you think.
Yes.
Because people live on these Pacific islands. That's what, you know, Pacific Islanders, like the Samoan Islands and all that kind of stuff. People live on those islands. And you'd be surprised how often people get lost randomly at sea just trying. I don't even.
Well, there's no street signs.
I don't know why people go out to sea without a really big boat, a big, nice boat. And a lake is great, but it's out to sea?
So you know I love the ocean, right? You know I feel comfortable in the ocean. There's something about me, I gotta see land.
Oh, you gotta see the land.
So I've gone out on some not huge boats.
And big enough.
Big enough, but the second that I don't see the island or land anymore, all of a sudden there's something that flips in me, and the very comfortable guy on the water or in the water isn't as comfortable on the water.
Oh, man. Honestly, that's one of my worst fears, I'm not gonna lie. To be lost at sea.
Really?
Yeah, because there's these stories about.
Number one fear for me, buried alive. Always has
buried
been.
Alive is a
buried alive.
One. Buried alive, burned alive. Those are really bad.
I'd rather be burned alive than buried alive.
There are these stories.
Seriously.
Really?
Yes.
The pain. But I guess it only lasts a little while until your nerve hitting.
Buried alive.
Buried alive is really bad. Trust me, that's terrible. That used to happen back in the olden days.
Ugh.
Like, because they would misdiagnose people. Like, oh, he's dead. And they would just bury it.
Well, everyone was dying back then, too. Everyone was dying
at
every age.
That's true. You would die for
It's not like if a 23-year-old's dead now, you make sure and check. Like, did you do a double check on the pulse there? Yeah, we did the double check.
Oh,
like,
man.
Like, back then, it was like, hey, Harold died. Well, at least he made it to 23. That's the oldest that family's gotten.
Oh, man. But there have been stories about people who go to the Bahamas and they go scuba diving, and then they'll get left out there.
Ugh.
Like, just because they either, I don't know how they get left, but it happens. It's happened before. And then they get eaten. Well, they never find them.
What do you mean left? Like,
they got left. What do you mean? They went scuba diving out there with a bunch of people, and then they didn't
the company have a head count?
It's happened before. And there's a movie about it, actually. I forgot the name of that movie. It's a movie about it. I'll tell you about it in a bit.
Clothed and Afraid.
I don't know
Geared
what it is.
Up and Afraid.
People lost it. They just say, be careful out there, people, if you're going out to sea. That's all we're saying.
All right. Two hours to go. We will have another off the record for you. We'll get back to that Big 12 schedule, Big 12 plus one. Who's that plus one going to be? How does it impact UT? And yes, Gary P. had an apology. This is The Horn.